Welcome back, everyone. This is the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. I'm your host, Scott, joined by Rich with your average everyday Chiefs talk. All of our episodes are available on most streaming platforms. Just search for the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. You can also check us out on our social media pages, such as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest episodes and up-to-date Chiefs news. All right, so it's been a minute, Rich, since we've been on here. Obviously, me traveling up to Arizona and then kind of quickly turn around going to Orlando this past weekend. You've been busy with a lot of stuff you had going on in your life too as well. So we obviously didn't get a chance to ever set up a preview for week two matchup against the Los Angeles Chargers. But hey, you know, it was a short week, so we also had that too as well. So there's a lot going on. So now we're finally kind of getting back into groove and starting with basically recapping that week two game against the Chargers. And obviously today is the first day of fall, so thank goodness, because it just feels like summer was way too long, even though the last few days it was pretty much hot. So today's like the first day actually the fall weather starting to hit. But I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm just glad that it's now like actually fall and not more anymore summer.
Hey, as long as the weather matches this season, I'm fine, because it was blazing hot this week and it shouldn't be, but I guess it was the last week for it to be like that. It was allowed to be that way, right? So
right,
that's all I care about.
Indeed. So starting with, like I said, we're recapping that week two matchup where the Chiefs end up winning 27-24 over the Chargers. I'll send it to you for the stats from the game.
All righty. So going over the team stats, right? From a yardage perspective, the Chiefs were at 319, Chargers were at 401. In the air, Chiefs had 226, so the Chargers 326. On the ground, the Chiefs had 93 and the Chargers had 75. Some of the other big team stats, right, are from a sacks perspective. So the Chargers allowed 2 sacks, Chiefs allowed 1. And then I think everyone is very familiar on which team threw an interception and which did not, because that's all Twitter has been talking about, is the amount of dropped pass or dropped interceptions that Patrick constantly throws, which is only a stat that Patrick seems to have,
right?
Because no one else does. So we all remember Justin Herbert's interception on the goal line when Jared Cook seemed to be too tired to run a route, and he just wasn't on the same page with Justin Herbert. So that's it from a team perspective. And then from an individual perspective, obviously, Patrick, the leading passer for the Chiefs, right? 24 out of 35, 235 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. On the ground, Clyde Edwards-Helaire had a low carry day, but he had 74 yards with an average of 9.2. He had that big scamper there at the end where he was holding on for his life, right? And then you have Travis Kelce led the way for the Chiefs from a receiving perspective with 5 receptions, 51 yards. Touchdowns on the Chiefs were scored by Justin Watson once again. And then Jerick McKinnon, the nice little underhand catch there by Patrick. Legarius Sneed led the Chiefs in tackles. Both, once again, considering both solo and assisted. So that's a constant theme that we've talked about with Willie Gay, Nick Bolton, and Rashad Fenton right behind them with 6. With 10 tackles. Willie Gay had 11, 6 and 5 split on solo versus assisted. Nick Bolton had 10, 50-50 split there on solo versus assisted. And then, yeah, I guess if you want to put Rashad Fenton as the next one, even though he only had 6 tackles compared to the other guys that had double digits. So, and then one of the big stats, right, was Jalen Watson, our 7th round pick, getting some first team snaps there in goal line and taking a Justin Herbert pass 99 yards?
Yes.
Or an interception there. So that's the interception of the game. And then Chris Jones with 2 sacks. So, pretty good game overall defensively compared to the Chargers' high-powered offense. I think when you, on paper, Mahomes' numbers don't look terrible, But I think when you watch the game, it was not his most cleanest game, right? Let's say maybe not being on the same pitch with the wide receivers all the time. I think it's kind of some of the nuances, right, of getting to, just being a new group with the new quarterback. Patrick also helped the sacks column because he was definitely pressured, mm-hmm. but he was able to avoid some sacks, right? So on from a numbers perspective, the game doesn't look that bad at all. I think this is, again, right, one of those games where maybe the scoreboard doesn't tell the true story, or I should say the stats don't tell the true story. But, yeah, I mean, it's a close game. I think that's what everyone – well, for the most part, what everyone expected.
Yeah, and kind of just to, reiterate what you just said is, going into this game, I think a lot of people had a lot of hype for it. Even it being a Thursday night football, we all know how Thursday night football games are normally pretty much letdowns just because they're a short week for teams and it's hard to prepare. So this is actually the very first week that we've seen that, obviously, because the first Thursday of the season doesn't really count because they didn't play a game before that. So as you can see that. But, yeah, so this one is the first – real matchup, obviously, that people are looking forward to with the Chargers. Always on paper every year, analysts are like, they're going to win the division, run away with it. And, look what we've seen in the past, what, 5-6 years, right? And, we've still obviously won the division. So, and I think right from the get-go from this game, it stood out right away. Like, this was going to be a good game. Obviously, the Chiefs led the league last year in first drive touchdowns, early scoring. And so their first drive that they, came out, got the ball first, and obviously the Chargers stopped them, so they had a punt. But I'd say, as far as, the actual, impact plays or highlights from this game, kind of start with the first touchdown that the Chiefs had, which was the underhand pass from Patrick Mahomes to Jerry McKinnon, that 9-yard pass. And I'm telling you, when I'm sitting there, obviously, at the game, and you see that, I am just like, how does he see these players? Like, it just amazes me how many times, he does things like this, and players, he just seems to flick it in there, and they're open, whatever. And, they're not open, but they're open to, I guess his range. To kind of flick it in there and him to score. But it kind of reminded me of the Houston Texans playoff game we had when I think he did something similar like that, and he found Kelce kind of in a small gap and he threw it to him. So it kind of reminded me of that play. But it just seems like every time, no matter what, a play is never over when Patrick Mahomes' vision comes into play, because he can always seem to see that player that no one else sees with that there's just that tunnel vision, right? I mean, just he just sees it. Obviously there's plays where there might be players open that he doesn't see it, but it always seems on those goal line plays like that, he'll just find that player. So I just thought that was one of the most impressive plays in the game. And then obviously the second one that I wanted to kind of point out was the 41-yard pass from Mahomes to Justin Watson, which I believe, if I remember recall, I think he beat their number one cornerback, J.C. Jackson, on that play. And it was a brilliant route by Justin Watson and also pass by Mahomes. It was just kind of a perfect play. Obviously, Mahomes had to step up because the pressure kind of got to him, so they kind of pocket collapsed. So he had to step up into that and make that nice throw. But that was a pretty good pretty good throw and catch on that play for that 41-yard pass, which at that point put us up. We were still down because we were down 17-7 at that point. So we were 17-14 to make it within 3 points. So those are probably the two important touchdowns as far as on the offensive side. Obviously, you mentioned the 99-yard interception, return for touchdown, which actually I'll probably mention that here in a little bit because I kind of want to give that its own thing to it. But as far as on the actual, touchdowns that we had on offense, those ones are probably the most important ones. Other important things, though, from the game, Mike Williams, obviously the wide receiver for the Los Angeles Chargers, he always seems to have pretty good games. I did look up last year, there was one game, I think it was the game in LA, that he didn't have that good of a game. But when he played here in Kansas City last year, he had a good game. He put up another good game against us on Thursday as well. What was it, eight catches for 113 yards and touchdown, like you said too as well. But he always seems to have good games. I don't know what it is, but he's the target that seems to come up with good games. It's always, if it wasn't Mike Williams, you know, it used to be what, Antonio Gates beforehand. It's always somebody for the Chargers, I feel like.
His size really helps it, right? We don't have the tallest corners. I think, most of our corners are somewhere between, well, obviously 5'11 to 6'1.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. The same way that they always find a way to kind of blow it is, I guess, the same way that one of the receivers always tears us up.
Right. So, this made me think about something else too about that, but I'll mention that here in a minute. Obviously, the kicker that we had was Matt Amendola. He ended up having, obviously, a few extra points and a few field goals, one from 19 and one from 31 yards. So he actually filled in pretty nicely for Butker. Obviously, didn't have to take any long chances with that as well. But like I said, while he is out, I think he fits in pretty nicely, at least for the moment. And then obviously the one play that everyone seems to be talking about, other than, you know, the interception, some other things, is Travis Kelce's catch and run when he's trying to score inside the red zone. And Derwin James studs him up, you know, Kelce kind of looks like he's about to he's like jumping in the air, right? And then Derwin James basically catches him, kind of like throws him to the ground. Where all of us in the stadium were thinking, like, hey, that should be a penalty because he kind of body slammed him onto the ground. But as a defensive player, I mean, I think that was a nice play that he made, obviously. But it's just been the talk. I mean, I've seen, like, they already got murals in of this picture. And, like, I think they've got T-shirts now. But I'm like, hey, you guys still lost. But, it was a nice play. It was still a nice play. But, back to the thing I thought of when you talk about Mike Williams real quick, because then it kind of wraps up through all the highlights that were probably from this game, was we're sitting there, and obviously we're up 27-17 with about 3 minutes to go, and they get the ball back. And it's funny because I don't know if you knew this, but the person that was the the special drummer or the that beats the drum at the beginning of the game, it was Dwayne Bowe. And
yeah, it was.
Yeah, so it's interesting because I've seen, and I don't know if you remember this game, but I've seen it where the Chiefs were up by, I think, either 10 or 14 points, and it was 2 minutes to go. It was with Philip Rivers. This was probably like maybe 6-7 years ago. And all of a sudden, like, they score, they get the onside kick, and they kick the onside kick, and who it goes to? It goes to Dwayne Bowe. He jumps up, tries to grab the ball, and it just falls. It falls from him. They recover it. They go down, they score. And if I remember correctly, I think they go for a two-pointer, and they win the game. So I'm thinking to myself, it's less than 3 minutes to go, and the Chargers end up going, and they score, make it 27-24 with a minute to go. And I'm thinking, like, oh, great. This is going to happen all over again because Dwayne Bowe's even here today for this game. And I'm thinking, like, this is going to be all over. And then obviously, they kick it to Justin Watson on the onside kick, and he drops it. And I'm like, oh, no. Like here he goes again. And luckily, we recovered it. But I was having bad thoughts about that one with all the thing together. But I thought that was something funny to share. But, it's like, man, hopefully that didn't happen. But thankfully, it didn't at that point. But, as far as the game, I mean, man, it was a great game from start to finish. Even though, you know, at some points it looked like the Chargers had the game won, or, you know, obviously the Chiefs had it. Just a lot of it just kind of just – it went both ways, right? I mean, obviously some of the officiating of this game was kind of horrible. I don't know, but like I said, overall your thoughts of the game, but it was kind of just back and forth, like, for most of the game.
Yeah, I mean, it is what, let's say, I guess you'd want it to be from a competitive aspect, right? I think we always talk about that. Of course, we want the Chiefs to win and blow out every single team, right? And it'd be Bama versus anybody. But that's not the reality of football, right? You want games to be competitive, and it was. I mean, and really, you know, from a live perspective, what I was able to catch, I mean, we were technically struggling most of the game, right? On paper, you could say that we're the better team, aside from a few plays. And that's the cool part about being a Chiefs fan right now, is, you know, there was a time we were on the opposite end of that, right? Where we didn't have players making plays. And when you're a really good team, a seventh round draft pick, rookie draft pick, can make a 99-yard game leading interception, right? I wouldn't say game winning because there's still a lot of time left, right? But that's what happens when you're on good teams, is you can take players that maybe if they play for, let's say, for example, the Bears or something, or the Colts, right, who haven't started off this year as great. And they don't make, you know, it's harder to make plays because everyone's trying to make a play because you're not good overall. So for us, it was obviously good that he made that play because, yeah, we were struggling. And at that moment, I wouldn't say that I was a little bit more confident about us winning, because I'm not that naive. But it was kind of like that here go the Chargers choking again moment that they always find a way to do, right, in clutch moments. And I would say it's a Justin Herbert thing and a Brandon Staley, but it happened under Rivers, right, with that fumble when someone supposedly popped a firework and the ball was snapped, right, at Arrowhead on the Thursday night game. I mean, yeah, they beat us, what was it, 3 years ago in Arrowhead on a kind of like a walk-off touchdown.
Yeah.
But that was one of, I don't know how many times that they've lost at Arrowhead on a Thursday night game, you know. So yeah, I mean, to your point, right, competitive game, fun. You know, I'm sure when we go to LA, it'll be just as competitive. And at the end of the day, I mean, the AFC West still runs through Kansas City, and you have to beat the Chiefs in order to claim that crown. And let's say they weren't able to do so.
Right. And you could say, you know, obviously when they were up 17-7, and like you had mentioned, you know, previously how a lot of people talk about how many balls that should have been intercepted, you know, Mahomes threw. Obviously there was that one critical one there. I mean, we could be talking way different, because if they intercept that ball, obviously it wasn't, you know, because it did hit the ground. But if that was, you know, ruled interception, or actually was a pure interception, we might be talking something way different. I mean, we're talking about maybe the Chargers win 27-14 or something. We don't know, obviously. So it always is how the ball bounces. And then obviously, you know, like we had mentioned, the 99-yard interception that Jalen Watson made, that was, you know, kind of right there. And he, you know, it was impressive by that whole means, by the whole play. But I'm glad I kind of saved that a little bit, because I kind of want to talk about a little bit of that too as well. How – I know you mentioned Jared Cook, but it was actually Jared Everett was the guy that ran the gas.
And but, you know what's funny is when I was watching the highlights after the game, someone did the exact same thing.
Right. But so, no, the reason why I mentioned that is because it actually was my favorite moment from the game. From I know it probably was from most people, but the funny thing is seeing that live is, so Jared Everett catches a pass and runs about 10 yards, about 10, 15 yards, I believe, and, you know, kind of makes a bulldoze inside the – I want to say it's inside the 10 anyways. I don't know if it's inside the 5. But immediately as he gets up, he signals to come out to play because he's gassed. So I see that right away, because it's kind of right in my direction of where I'm sitting at. So I'm like, oh, man, they said they better not try to throw it to him, you know, or else, because he might not be able to make a play if it's a, you know, certain pass to him. And what do you know? Justin Herbert throws from the pass, and he wasn't like ready enough, or just didn't have enough gas to get to it, or something went wrong with that. And then that's obviously when Jalen Watson picked it off. But I don't even know if you even seen that. But after Watson had just picked it off, like his mouthpiece, Jared Everett's mouthpiece fell out and it hit the ground. He didn't even chase him. Like he was so gassed, like he didn't even move after the interception was made by Watson. So it was a very interesting play, just kind of unfolding in me. And, you know, obviously when you're there live and you're seeing that, you know, right before all that happens, obviously I didn't know that, you know, or no one knew that Herbert was going to throw it that way, but I just thought it was weird that he was trying to signal to come out that play, and he ends up, you know, ends up being involved in that play in some way. But
yeah, and you know what's funny is, you know, I mean, I'm a coach as well, right? And I mean, I was a player and I still play a sport, you know, at the moment. And it's one of those where how much of it is trusting the player and his health versus, you know, just trying to be tough as a coach and be like, man, just, you know, just keep playing, you know, just play it out. And in this situation, it's why the interception happened, right? Like Jared Everett couldn't play anymore, and he ran a really weak route.
Right.
Herbert expected him to be somewhere else. So yeah, it's always like I like those kind of situations from an analytical perspective because, again, you know, they were that far, they were trying to hurry up. You know, without a doubt, like they had plenty of time to get him off because you have until, you know, you have him between the 30s to sub players. I understand that it was closer to the goal line, but I mean, where he started signaling, hey, take me out, or I need to sub, he could have easily ran off, right, brought someone else on, but they try to catch the kind of the Chiefs off guard. So,
yep.
I think for me, let's say, I mean, he's, I don't know how old Jared Everett is compared to Travis Kelce, but I think from a Brandon Staley comparison to Andy Reid, that's where Andy Reid's experience, Bill Belichick's experience, you know, Mike Tomlin, they usually don't end up in those situations, right? Because they understand, or maybe they trust their players a little bit more. And again, right, I can be completely overjudging the situation or overthinking it. I mean, it's obviously to our team's benefit, right? But yeah, that was definitely a game-defining moment. And it seems like once again, Brandon Staley's judgment as a coach is put in question, right? Like the fourth down, going forward on fourth down, right? Last year on that Thursday night game. And then obviously now this, right? Should you have subbed him out so that didn't happen?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. No, and, well, like, to your point, too, as well, it's just like, you know, I think you had mentioned it. It's just that the Chiefs find a different way to win. And this time it's the defense stepping up, which is another thing, too, as well. But yeah, as far as on Staley, it just seems like something comes back to bite him once again, even though, you know, there was moments or opportunities I think he could have done some plays that he probably would have done last year, right? Like maybe go for it on certain or, you know, kind of go for it all in certain plays, but he didn't. So I felt like he changed in some ways, but I don't know. I think like in that point too as well, I think if someone's like that, you just got to come off the field, get somebody fresh in there at that play, even though they were kind of doing that no huddle offense like all for most of the whole game, especially on third downs. I don't know if you saw that, but on third downs, it was third and short. They would just run up to the line real quick, give it to Austin Ekeler and get the first down. I mean, they were just trying to catch the Chiefs off guard as much as they could the whole night. So then going to my game ball actually is I am picking for game ball is actually Chris Jones, just because he had two sacks, but he seemed like he had three tackles overall, but he seemed like he just had a brilliant night all the way from first half, second half. I think he stepped up really well, had a really great game, even though I know obviously Willie Gay was flying around and out there with 11 tackles, and of course Nick Bolton with double digit tackles too as well. I just felt like Chris Jones was deserving of that game ball for the game. I don't know if you had anybody different, Rich, but that's kind of what it went with.
Yeah, so to definitely be different, right? Because yeah, Chris Jones has started off the season really, really well. According to PFF, I know we're not a fan of PFF at the moment because Mahomes has been a very
right.
Well, lower ranked, right? But right. On the positive side, I think they have him ranked as the top defensive lineman at the moment based on pressures, sacks, so on and so forth, right? So good call out on your end, good game ball. Mine will go to obviously the kid who made a play. Anytime that you have a seventh round draft pick, rookie draft pick, making a play like that, and the fact that he took it 99 yards, right? Because for a second there, I thought
he
might have got him, but you know, the team rallied there and you know, was able to get a key block here and there for him, as well as getting past Justin Herbert. So that's who mine would go to, and I'm sure he got one as well in the game, you know, from Andy Reid, as they do multiple game balls.
For sure. And I, you know, and even though we have a category here that we have like players disappointed, I really couldn't say anybody individually. You know, obviously I know the offensive line as a whole kind of struggled, even though both tackles played pretty well, but some of the interior offensive line at points were having, you know, hard time through most of the night. So I guess you could say, you know, maybe it's a little disappointment there, but I mean, heck, the Chargers defensive line is like what, top five in the league. So like, I mean, with Mack and, you know, Bosa, so it's kind of hard to be like, well, you know, they did bad. They played against really good Chargers defensive line and defense all around. So I didn't really go there. What I kind of went with was kind of like the lack of plays that Juju and MVS were kind of involved with. Obviously they, you know, they only combined it, you know, for about what, five catches for 23 yards. So it was kind of like they didn't. I don't know if these things get involved enough, or they just were kind of, you know, maybe just not open enough. But those are probably just some of the little disappointments I think I had from the game.
Yeah, I think to your point, like most teams in the NFL, if not all of them, are going to struggle with Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa. That defense is just really, really good. Their secondary is good as well. We're right with Asante Samuel Jr., J.C. Jackson, even though Watson put him in a blender on that route. Derwin James is, I mean, he's the best paid safety in the NFL and a really, really good one. Let's say now with Jamal Adams being out, he's probably the best safety in the game. So, yeah, they have a great defense, right? So no takeaways from them, right? You got to give them credit where credit is due. They're a good defense. So I understand maybe why the receivers weren't great. But, yeah, at the end of the day, we found a way to overcome all that and win the game.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so moving on to our opponent this Sunday. Obviously, we'll be traveling to Indianapolis to face the Colts on Sunday at noon. Back to an early game. So as far as the game for us against the Colts, what are we looking like as far as, you know, inside the numbers?
All right. So high level here, the leaders, right? Matt Ryan at quarterback. He is 48 out of 80 so far this year in two games. 547 yards with one touchdown. Their top receiver is, I don't even know this guy is, Ashton Dellen. 8 receptions, 125 yards. And then Jonathan Taylor, he got most of his yards in game one because I have him in fantasy and he didn't do anything last week. With 40 rushes, 215 yards, and one touchdown. So his average is still amazing. I think he's still the leading rusher in the NFL. But they come into this game at 0-1-1, right? They tied their week one matchup with the Texans. I think they ended up blowing a lead against the Texans. And then, yeah, they ended up tying that game. So just talking about ranks for the Colts, right? They come in dead last in the NFL from a point score perspective at 10. And then allow, they're giving up 22 points per game, which is about midway through the NFL rankings. From a passing yardage perspective as in how much they throw the ball, they're the 10th best. And then on the ground, they're the 12th best. What's a yards per game? Again, right, they had a very good game one on the ground, and then the second game was just terrible. Defensively, they're about, you know, again, right, as I mentioned at the rankings, they're about mid-grade defense, 15th best pass defense, and then the 10th best rushing defense. So, yeah, that's what, let's say, the Colts look like. I think the high-level overview without the numbers is Frank Wright, once again, starting out very, very slow or not ideal with the Colts. You know, they brought in a very, very, very experienced quarterback in Matt Ryan and hoping that it'd be more control base, handed off to Jonathan Taylor a lot. Mm-hmm. Find Michael Pittman, Paris Campbell, you know, the rookie Alex Pierce. But they have their line isn't the greatest. Their defense has the best player out at the moment in Shaquille Leonard, right? Since now I can't even remember what his old name was, but what was his, cause he just changed his name. He said, call me, Shaquille. What was his,
it used to be, Darius, right?
Yeah. Was it?
Yeah. I was sitting Darius, like, it was Darius. Darius,
but
I didn't even know he changed. I didn't know he changed his name until now. Oh.
So if I'm not mistaken, I think that's his first or middle name. And he said, just call me by this now versus Darius. Okay. So he's been out, but their defense is still really good. The one thing about them, though, is that Gus Bradley is their defensive coordinator, right? Since their defensive coordinator from last year is now the head coach in Chicago. So we have a really good way of beating up on Gus Bradley defenses because he plays that cover three zone or man coverage. And anytime you like to play with one safety down the middle for Patrick, it goes really bad for you. So looking at some of the numbers from previous year when he was in Oakland, I mean, we tore them up with Gus Bradley. And anytime teams try to play, like I said, a single high safety, even if it is cover three. So yeah, that'll be something to look at, right, to see if that trend continues. They do have Stephon Gilmore in their secondary, which is, you know, still probably one of the better corners, even though he's on a decline. But yeah, them not having Shaquille Leonard, and he probably won't be, I know, but he practiced. So Yeah, if he's able to play, if he's able to fully go for this weekend, that's better for them. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see from a scheme perspective what the Colts do if Gus Bradley changes it up, because historically he has not.
Right. All right, yeah, so speaking of injuries, we'll go over kind of a little bit of injuries for both teams. Starting with the Chiefs, also Harrison Butker, our kicker, his left ankle injury, did not practice yesterday or today. Chances are he probably won't play again this week. I expected him to be back at the soonest, the Tampa Bay game next week. So we'll see about if he ends up, like I said, playing next week. I just don't see him still playing this week. Also, Mike Dana, one of our backup defensive ends, has a calf injury. He also did not practice yesterday or today, so he might most likely be out this week. And then Mecole Hardman had that heel injury that he injured against the Chargers. Limited practice both yesterday and today. I think he'll probably end up still playing because he did come back in the game last week after he got hurt. So I think he'll end up still playing this week. So no worries on that. That is pretty much it for the injury front on the Chiefs side. On the Colts, the only one was kind of what we mentioned earlier. We're talking about Michael Pittman Jr. with that quad injury that he was limited in practice both yesterday and today. So I can't see why he would miss this game, but I think he'll probably end up giving it a go, I would think. The only other injury that they looks like they had was one of their defensive ends had a back injury. I don't know if I pronounce this right. Nah, is it Yannick? Gosh, I don't even know how to say this. I just see his last name. Nakwe?
You there, remember okay. Yannick Ngakwe from – remember he was in Jacksonville?
Then he went to okay, I was trying, I was, that's right.
Raiders.
I, was
trying,
I felt like he played – I felt like he played for Ravens. Okay, so yeah. I was taking a minute. I was like, wait, is this a rookie guy? And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. So he was limited yesterday, then not practiced today. So we'll see how he goes. But yeah, he's a pretty talented defensive end. But like I said, outside of what you mentioned, they have on defense like Leonard and whatnot. I think they don't really have that. And Gilmore, like I said, on his downslope of his career, doesn't have a whole lot. And I forgot they do have DeForest Buckner too as well, but I think their defense isn't really all that great or hasn't been this year anyway, so we'll have to see how that plays out. But that is pretty much the injury report for both teams. I did like to mention, because we actually forgot to mention this at the beginning of the episode, about Willie Gay's 4-game suspension. So obviously we won't be seeing our starting linebacker for the next 4 games. So we will be seeing our rookie Leo Chanel play a lot more time in his absence, which he played fantastic in the second half when he got him and George Karloftis played pretty well in the second half when they got more snaps and more involved in the game. So looking forward to actually seeing the rookie play a lot more. And then I think I want to say it's Darius Harris will play probably a little bit more of Chanel's snaps too as well.
Elijah Lee, right?
Or Lee. Yeah, they might just like rotate some of those guys between Lee and Harris. But yeah, but definitely Chanel and Bolton will be their main two linebackers. So that will be interesting to see for 4 games. Hopefully it doesn't hurt us, because obviously Willie Gay is that emotional guy you see on the sideline pumping everybody up, and also he flies around out there on the field. So
yeah, I mean, as a rookie, that's what you want, right? You obviously don't want any of your teammates to given the situation Willie Gay's in, right, for be suspended for that reason or for any reason that you get suspended. But, I mean, that's just how sports works, right? You got to step up, fill in. I mean, to your point, right, I think we've seen that Chanel is definitely as hyped or one of those energetic linebackers that we all love to see in sports and football. So, right. Yeah, hopefully he's able to, fully capitalize on Willie Gay being out for 4 games. And, one thing I love about Andy Reid is – or I guess this entire staff, right, is they do reward players that are making plays. That's why we had Jalen Watson in. That's why maybe Josh Williams, even though he did well in the preseason, maybe he hasn't played too much. Let's say technically in the regular season, they go with folks who are doing well, right, in training and obviously in the games, because you got to factor in both of those things. So if Leo does really well, who knows what Willie Gay comes back to.
Right. They could all just share. They could split their snap count. I mean, obviously,
what you want, right?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to have Bolton change his snap. He's basically the Mike guy, so I don't think you're going to have him change. But as far as Willie and Chanel, that'd be kind of good if they rotate them both in, you know, almost equally, depending on how things go. So keys to the game. What do you have on the offensive side for us going for the Colts game?
Well, offensively, I think there's got to continue with that balance, right? Trying to run the ball. I mean, we didn't have many rushes last game between our between, let's say, Clyde having eight, and then, you know, a few others behind him having a few. So I think more balance. And then again, right, is, you know, what do we see out of the wide receiver group? Is it going to be, again, I think I saw Saturday today that eight or nine different Chiefs receivers, including tight ends, have all caught a pass. So, you know, is it going to be that continued, you know, distributing the targets, or do we start to focus a little bit more on a few players, right? I do know that Sky Moore only got, what, two snaps, I think, on offense. I might be wrong on two snaps, but maybe it was like 2%. I don't know, whichever one is greater. And Airbnb said that that's on him. He should have got him a lot more snaps. So maybe we'll see more of Sky Moore. So offensively for me, it's balance in regards to play calls, but then a continued approach of distributing the ball to whoever is in the best position to make a play, whether it's Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Travis Kelce, or even Sky Moore.
Right. And I think this is what you're seeing this year is because you have like so many different options, because obviously in the past it's like Tyreek and Kelce, like those are going to be your two guys. They're going to get you at least 6 to 7 catches a game, right? So now it's like this year, it's like you still have Kelce, but you just have a whole bunch of different guys. I know you had mentioned about Sky Moore, obviously he had lag time. I think even Jody Fortson wasn't in there that much. Obviously, there was a goal line play that they put him in there because they're like they're gonna try to single him out and throw it up high to him, and Chargers knew they were going to him on that play. So maybe try to see him a little bit more in there. But I think what I had put it on there was just like kind of like the same thing you said, balance, continue to kind of spread the ball around. Maybe try to get Justin Watson more involved. I mean, obviously, he had that really nice touchdown, and we see he could do a lot of things in the preseason as well. So maybe try to get him, you know, more routes or something that he can be open to as well, because I think he can be a game changer for us this year on some of certain situations. So maybe try to see if you can get him more in the game plan. And then also continue to get that running game going early, especially Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I feel like when we've gotten that going pretty early, it does seem to help out a little bit. I mean, obviously, he's not rushing like Jonathan Taylor is, getting 100 yards a game or more, except for last week. Obviously, he didn't. But you know, at least, you know, trying to get him more into the groove and, you know, see more we can do with that and, you know, kind of just getting McKinnon too involved. And, you know, Pacheco, I think he only had 2 carries. But, yeah, just got to get more of that running game involved, because that will definitely help as the season goes on. As far as on the defensive side, what you got for the keys of the game?
So for me, I think it's pretty simple, right? Is you obviously stop their one very, very, very scary weapon in Jonathan Taylor. So I think the real answer is if the Chiefs are able to score early and make the Colts more pass dependent, that is much more in their favor, because their line is not that good. And then they've got Matt Ryan, who is, I think, 39 years old and a sitting duck, right? He's got Peyton Manning's mobility.
Right.
So if we can let, you know, Chris Jones, Clark, Karlaftis, if it's blitzes that Spagnuolo brings, if we can just get after the quarterback, pin our ears back, cover Pittman, Campbell, you know, all of the wide receiver options, which I think we can do well with for the most part. I think that's the real key to the game, is if the offense is able to get up early, make them more pass dependent as opposed to run dependent.
Yeah,
that really dictates the game. So, from a defensive perspective, it's just if it's ball control for the Colts, you know, obviously stop Jonathan Taylor. But if you can make Matt Ryan beat you, I think it goes really, really well for the defense.
Oh yeah, and along those lines, I mean, how the Colts offensive line is, everything like that. I mean, I can expect like Chris Jones having another good game, and then, you know, maybe, you know, like Karlaftis or somebody else stepping up too again. But yeah, I think the defensive line is going to have a good game this game against them. But like you kind of mentioned, it's the one and only thing for them is stopping Jonathan Taylor. They're going to probably try to get him going early, Obviously, if we get the ball first, you know, obviously if we score, you know, putting up 7-0, yeah, it's still early in the game. We're going to obviously try to get Jonathan Taylor going. But if we can do kind of what Jacksonville did last week, I think he only had 54 yards rushing last week, but kind of just, you know, stop him. That's pretty much the key to the game. Because like I said, I mean, you're going to have Matt Ryan beat you. And if he did end up beating you, then that's pretty sad because he's, like I said, not fast, not mobile at all. Their offensive line isn't that great, so we'll have to see. But, yeah, I think that's what it is. Just make sure that JT doesn't go off like he did week one. So let's see about that. So as far as our game's prediction, as far as on score-wise, obviously I have the Chiefs winning. I don't think it's going to be close. I really don't. I have the Chiefs winning 38-17. I really think this is going to be like week one against Arizona. I really think it's going to be a very similar type of game. But I don't think it's going to be close at all. And I think the Chiefs do have win pretty big on this.
I agree with you. I think at max, the Colts will score 17 points. And the Chiefs will be in the mid to late 30s. So, like I said, if it's like a 38-40, something like that, you know, I can see it without a doubt being a score. And then the Colts within the 14-17 range. They're just – their offense is obviously very Jonathan Taylor dependent. And he's amazing, right? He's the best running back in the NFL by far. But, again, if the Chiefs get up on them early, make them pass first versus run – it can get out of hand pretty handily. And honestly, the Chiefs should execute in every single way right there. Patrick Mahomes has tore up Gus Bradley on several occasions over the years. So I expect that to be very lopsided as well.
Right. Yep, definitely. All right. So before we actually get into our final thoughts thing, I actually had something at the top of my head. Still football, but it's not professional football. It's college football. And I thought I'd mention it because it's just, it's crazy how some of these teams, I mean, they don't play anybody really in the first three or four games is like, but the big game here in the area, obviously, is Duke versus Kansas, and they're both 3-0. And I guess we just found out that tickets were sold out for this game, which is crazy, right? Because, like, Jayhawk football, like, it just doesn't – they don't sell out. I mean, they don't right. They don't even come close to selling out. Maybe not even half the stadium right now. So, like – I mean, obviously, these teams haven't played nobody yet. This is probably out of everything they've now playing each other that are undefeated. But as far as, like, even though it's, like I said, we're neither really Jayhawks fans as far as on football or anything like that. I mean, I am on basketball, but not football. But, you know, as far as this game goes, I mean, what do you kind of expect? Is it probably just going to be like an onslaught offensive game? Or what would you think as far as on this being a kind of a local big game?
Man, I have no idea, to be honest, right? Like, I know I've heard KU's name. I hear their quarterback is really, really good. Some people talking about dark horse for the Heisman, so on and so forth. I'm like, it's, you know, the third game, or I guess now they're on the fourth game of the season, right?
Right.
I know more about Duke because they're in the ACC, being a Miami Hurricanes fan. Right. You know, so maybe I understand them just a little bit more, right? They're, I think, on their second year after David Cutcliffe, or maybe their first year. Mm-hmm. After David Cutcliffe, their longtime coach there at Duke, has moved on. So I'm one of those guys that, well, I'm from the Missouri side, so I could never root for KU. So right. I hope Duke wins. Know that goes against your DNA because from Carolina and you're a North Carolina fan, so you could never root for Duke. So,
right.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting game. And it's always like, I like the non-conference matchups. I like, you know, especially when the ACC comes over here. Mm-hmm. I'd love for Miami to come to KU because even though they've gone to Kansas State, I think Kansas State has been the closest, and I didn't go to that. So I would love to see if, I don't know, maybe the ACC and the Big 12 are doing something together or whatever the Big 12 ends up being.
And I think they are because I think – because, like, the SEC is doing something with the is it not the Pac – I can't remember if it's, like, the Pac-12 or something. But, like, I feel like they're doing – like a lot of these conferences are doing these games every year for different ones. Like, I think it's a home and away. Like, I mean, there's like a home game, you know, one year, and the next game it's a away game. So, you know, you never know. Miami might play KU in a few years if you jump and look at the schedule, possibly.
Right, for sure. Yeah, but I mean, no. We don't have anything on from a contractor perspective right now, but maybe right. Down the road.
Right. So, yeah, just so
let me ask you this since you brought up KU. Mm-hmm. So, Les Miles, right, has been gone 2 years now. This is the second year he's been gone.
Right.
Right, because I don't. Did they fire him?
It was about 2 years ago. I thought.
Was it 2 years ago, or did they let him go like some point last year? But
right around somewhere, either a year or two ago. Yeah.
But yeah, so is some of the success the players he was able to bring in, or is it just completely new coach, new scheme? I know the quarterback they have right is a transfer, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Right.
So what are your thoughts on that? Is it a little bit of Les Miles recruiting, which we know he was great at LSU, or is it just new coach, new scheme, and a good quarterback?
I think it's really a little bit of everything. I mean, I think it probably has something to do with some of his recruiting at the time, but I think a lot of it has to do with the new scheme, new coach. And obviously, like you said, I mean, if we're talking about this 8 games in, you know, they're like 7-1 or something, then we're like, oh, yeah, it's definitely the coach and the players he's brought in. But like it being like only the first 3 games and obviously they don't play a whole lot of people, it's kind of hard to say, yeah. Even though they played, I'm not saying that they didn't play any well. They played well in 3 games that they haven't really played, you know, a tough team. But no, I think on the flip side of it, I think more of it is having to do with probably just the new coach, new scheme, what I would say.
I mean, and better for KU is a very low bar, right, since they're usually terrible at football.
Right.
But, yeah, that's good for them, right? And anytime, you know, you get kind of one of those stories, it's good. So it'll be a fun matchup to, I guess, have in the background amongst all the other college games that are going on.
Right, yeah, and I thought it was interesting. I don't know if you know about the whole, like, the whole Blue Bloods thing, right? Like, they mentioned that in basketball. Like, they're all 3-0. Like, I mean, North Carolina is, Kentucky is, like, everyone's 3-0 in football. Oh, yeah,
Kentucky is, I think, what, top 10?
Yeah, so it's just, you're like, you're thinking to yourself, like, wait a minute, this is not December, it's not basketball time, and all of these teams are undefeated, so it's just, it's really odd.
And now you've got me interested, because let's say from a blue blood basketball perspective, yeah, Kentucky is number 8. Then after that, I guess they aren't ranked in the top 25.
No,
but yeah,
not.
North Carolina, KU, they got some votes. North Carolina would, I guess, be ranked like 28th.
Something like that. I saw that Miami was 25th, but being 2-1, yeah. I saw that. So yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, they should have won the game versus Texas A&M, but I think the lack of ability or inability to catch the ball is what did the Canes in versus Texas A&M. Because yeah, that would have been a nice little win versus an SEC opponent.
Right, right. All right. So finish out this segment we have for today on our final topic. Final thoughts topic we have is for the Thursday night football game tonight. And kind of like we mentioned earlier, how when the Chargers played the Chiefs, it was kind of really Amazon's first game that if it wasn't local, if you weren't like your team wasn't local, you couldn't get it anywhere than Amazon Prime. And they just came out with the stats from last week being that their first Amazon Prime got about 13 million viewers, which is a lot more than I think most people expected. Like, I think most people probably expected maybe half of that. So it seems like, you know, is it working for, you know, Amazon to doing this kind of solo or forcing people to, you know, go to one subscription to able to watch the games? And I think I kind of teased earlier too, is like, well, how many of those people sign up for free trials, right? Just for football or anything like that. But still, I mean, what are your thoughts as far as on that first, you know, first week with the Amazon and going forward? I mean, you think it's going to get more views, or I mean, how do you think it's going to probably evolve over time?
I mean, I don't know. I think the matchup obviously helped a lot last week, because some of these games are stinkers, right? Wait till we get, I don't know, Jaguars versus Jets, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But because, you know, some of the Thursday night games are really bad. But I think over time, people just understand that's the way to go. So if you want to watch football, you're gonna have to get it. And I think, of course, that, you know, Jeff Bezos will take the money, because to be honest, for the $20 that you pay a month, you get TV and you get your products, whatever you order, pretty fast. So I think it makes sense. The only thing though is it's coming, right, where there's gonna be a nice little price hike. Just because of this Thursday night game, because you know they're not going to stop there, right? They're gonna, if the if it's true regarding Bezos wanting to buy the Phoenix Suns, he's going to try to find a way to add NBA in there, because you can get Game Pass for your team through Prime, if I'm not mistaken, for NBA teams, right? But, you know, look for that to be next level, right? NBA, you know, mainstream NBA games on Amazon Prime. So
that would be nuts, because it would be nice to get, like, you know, if you wanted to, I wanted to get my Hornets games on, you know, Amazon Prime. I think that'd be kind of cool. Or they'll just do, you know, maybe not if it's just like, you know, obviously if he were to buy the Phoenix Suns, maybe it's something like this where they have multiple games a week, right? Where it's not talking about just like the Suns or anything, but multiple NBA games, period, that's just on Amazon. That would just be, throw another wrench into different primetime games that you have to have Amazon for.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting concept, but I mean, that's where TV is nowadays, which in a way I do appreciate it, because I'd rather kind of pay for three services that'll, you know, give me the team versus paying for one service that I only watch 2-3 channels on and doesn't give me all the games anyways. So,
right.
So but you also get your packages faster, right?
Oh, that's true. That is definitely true. So as far as tonight's Thursday night matchup with the Steelers and Browns, obviously it's not the matchup from last week, and obviously you don't have like Big Ben, you know, on the Steelers. You know, you have a lot of rookies on the Steelers side. The Browns doesn't have Deshaun Watson. So it's a game that, like, it's obviously like not like a good game like last week, right? But it's not like a terrible game. It's just one of those games you don't know about, because it's a good rivalry. These teams have been a really good rivalry since even dating back recently with the Myles Garrett situation and the helmet, you know, hitting the Steelers backup quarterback, I think, I forget his name. But I mean, you still have this rivalry that they have.
Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, Mason Rudolph. So you still have like this rivalry they have going on. But as far as the game tonight, I mean, what do you kind of expect? I mean, I'm picking the Steelers tonight just because I just don't. It's tough. And the only reason I'm picking the Steelers is just because it's kind of like a coin toss, because I think from what I've been seeing, like people that are talking about the game tonight, I think I saw half Browns, half Steelers, basically. It's just kind of however you kind of want to go with it.
Yeah, for me, it's one of those to where it's still a great rivalry game, whether they're both bad, which Steelers haven't been bad technically on paper forever. But it's interesting because of what's happening with Trubisky, right? The knock on him has always been his ability to throw the downfield ball. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what his targets have been talking about. So Tomlin is a great coach. I think they are in Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken. So Cleveland has that aspect of it. Obviously, they have Brissett in over Watson at the moment. They just blew a pretty nice lead and lost to the Jets, which is pretty bad.
Right.
So Cleveland, of course, is looking to redeem themselves from last weekend's debacle. But then the Steelers, they always play the way they play. Yeah, they're without TJ Watt. But the Steelers always play very, very good in these games. So to your point, I'm going with the Steelers. I think Trubisky will be efficient. He won't be outstanding, but he'll be efficient. And ultimately what wins it is, I think the Steelers defense is playing better than the Browns defense, even though technically on paper, I guess the Browns might have a better defense.
Right.
So yeah. And it sucks because, like, obviously I'll be at training for most of this game, but I like these matches because they're hard hitting football, you know, with how the Browns play, with how the Steelers play. So it should be a fun game. So thank you, Amazon, for giving us two decent matchups as opposed to Bears and Texans in week right. three or something.
So a quick question to wrap it up too. So when do you think the rookie Kenny Pickett will start? Because here's the thing. So I have George Pickens, wide receiver, on my fantasy team. And from what I've been hearing is, like, until they start Kenny Pickett, I don't think you're going to see a lot of impact that the wide receiver George Pickens is going to have. So do you think, like, you know, if he's playing this mediocre ball or, you know, not doing as well, do you think like Pickett starts and, you know, midway through the season or before that? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
No, like, I think it'd have to be really bad for Trubisky to get in, because Tomlin's leadership, right? They voted Trubisky captain. You know, I don't think Tomlin would have been okay with that if he had doubts, which I'm sure he did. I mean, Trubisky was where he was for a reason.
Yeah.
I think it'll be he'll game manage most of the year, kind of just don't break us or don't make us lose Trubisky. And then Kenny Pickett really only comes in if it gets really bad. You know, I think Pickens is third on the in the pecking order behind Johnson and Claypool. Might even be fourth behind Freiermuth, right? The tight end. So right. Yeah, I think to answer your question, I don't think we'll see Kenny Pickett this year unless it gets terrible with Trubisky. Because the one thing about Tomlin, though, that is good is he is a great coach, and you know, he'll help someone understand, hey, it's time for a change. You know, I think that's one thing that's why Juju Smith-Schuster is no longer true in Pittsburgh, right? Is
yep.
Maybe his production, his health, and some of his TikTok antics probably weren't the most fun things for Tomlin. So, yeah, for me, I'd love to see Kenny Pickett right away because I really like him as a quarterback, and I think he fits the way that they're going to play.
Yeah.
But there's no need to rush him. I mean, it's only, week the third three. Game of the season. So
yeah, that's true. I just wanted to see him because I had Pickens on my team. I like him to get the ball more, but I don't think he's going to with Trubisky being there. So we'll see. But all right. So with that being said, that will conclude today's edition of the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. Like I said, we'll be back next week recapping the Chiefs' Week 3 game against the Indianapolis Colts. So check back us for that. So thanks again for listening. Don't forget to follow our podcast and go Chiefs.